and welcome to the Iran Podcast. I'm your host, Negar Mortazavi, a journalist and senior fellow at the Center for International Policy in Washington. My guest today is Benjamin Friedman, a policy director at Defense Priorities. He was previously a defense analyst at the Cato Institute and also a researcher at the Center for Defense Information. We'll be talking about the U.S. policy and strategy in the Middle East, and specifically after the October 7th attack. Ben, welcome to the Iran Podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. So let's first talk about October 7th and how the U.S. essentially has responded to that attack. What do you think has been the U.S. strategy or policy to what happened on October 7th?
Well, I think it shifted. The initial response by the Biden administration was widely characterized as a bear hug, total support for Israel and what it was doing in Gaza. That included sending two carrier groups to the area to help deter, the idea was at least help deter Hezbollah and other people who we feared might jump into the war against Israel. And that policy, however, shifted, I think, as the war went on and it became more difficult, at least politically, for the Biden administration not to be more critical of Israel. So we've at least seen a rhetorical shift from the Biden administration where they are at least criticizing the amount of civilian casualties and distance themselves to a degree from Israeli conduct in Gaza, albeit not in a way that really counts, which to me would involve threatening to withhold funds from Israel if they don't comply with our wishes.
Mm-hmm. And Ben, what is the end goal here? What do you think is a long-term vision? What is the U.S. hoping or predicting will happen in the medium, short, medium term, then also in the long term?
Well, I don't think that there's necessarily a coherent strategy at play here. You know, you can read now, for example, from Thomas Friedman in the New York Times about the emergence of a so-called Biden doctrine, which would involve pressure on Israel for a two-state solution, a effort to deter or hold down or even attack Iranian proxies in the region who have been obviously attacking U.S. forces in Syria and Iraq and shipping, if you include the Houthis, in the Red Sea. And thirdly, some kind of renewed or increased security commitment to Saudi Arabia. That's the so-called emerging Biden doctrine that I've read about. And I think it's incoherent in the sense that the two-state solution, laudable as it is as a goal, is not going to happen. The Netanyahu government in Israel is just not going to move forward on that, I think, almost no matter what the United States does, whether or not they get a normalization deal with the Saudis. I don't think that's a prize worth enough to them to make them change their view on the two-state solution. So that part of it's not going to happen. The position against Iran or Iranian proxies, I think we should talk more about, but it's to me unattached to any kind of larger strategic idea of what we're doing in the region. It seems to be just sort of enmity with Iran and groups that we say are linked to it for the sake of continuing enmity. And I don't know what we think we're getting out of it in a larger sense. And then, you know, getting closer to Saudi Arabia, I think, will have the effect of just dragging us in deeper to some kind of low-level or potentially even hotter conflict with Iran and potentially enable the Saudis to be a disruptive actor in the region as they were a few years ago. I think there's a kind of moral hazard at play there. So what the administration's doing in the Middle East, I think, is not strategic. I think it's disordered and confused, and we really ought to reevaluate our troop presence, particularly in Syria and Iraq, where We have troops there for, I think, no good reason, ostensibly to fight ISIS, but that's essentially over. According to some people, there to do something against Iran. But really, they're taking fire, and now some were killed in Jordan without any real decent rationale, and are a kind of bait for wider war with Iran. And I think that should end immediately. It should have ended years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about that. As you mentioned, this week there was a fatal attack on a U.S. base in Jordan. Iraqi militia, Iran-backed militia have taken responsibility. Three U.S. soldiers killed, 24 injured. And many see this as an escalatory step in what I see many escalatory steps since October 7th across the region. But what options do you think the U.S. has to respond? They're weighing options as we speak. It's Thursday, February 1st right now. And the administration has been, and the president himself have been talking about retaliation, potential options. Some in Washington are pressuring the admin to go for the snake's head, to attack Iran inside Iranian soil, to go all out. What do you think the U.S. options are? What is President Biden going to choose? And essentially, are the U.S. and Iran going to war, you think?
I don't think the U.S. and Iran are going to war under this administration, because I think both the Biden administration and the government in Iran want to avoid that, and I think they will. I'm not sure that will hold in a few years when we may have a different president. But clearly the United States has an option to bomb Iran and escalate. We could do that. It's hard for me to imagine, even if the most sort of fantastical dreams of Lindsey Graham and other hawks in the Senate and beyond are realized, how that would make anything better. I think, you know, if you look at the theory and history of strategic bombing, which is what we're talking about, it almost never succeeds in turning a population against its government, particularly, you know, a kind of one-off or twice-off bombing. The level of destruction needed to sort of accomplish the deterrent or politics changing aims that the advocates of that would seem to have is far higher than I think almost anyone has in mind. It would probably require a ground invasion. So, you know, what you're going to do if you bomb Iran is probably just make all the things we don't like about Iran worse. More support for proxies, more open attacks on U.S. forces in the region if we're foolish enough to leave them there, nuclear weapons development, and generally speaking, more angry, nationalistic, and anti-American politics. So I think that's possible, but it's sure not a good idea. The middle solution that the Biden administration seems to be headed for is another round of airstrikes against Qatab Hezbollah, the group that apparently was behind the attack in Jordan, plus presumably a bunch of other militias linked to Iran in the region, and probably some Iranian targets in Iraq and Syria, headquarters and things of that ilk. The Biden administration, by leaking and saying out loud that they're planning that kind of attack, I think has effectively told any IRGC guys in harm's way in Iraq and Syria that they should head for a bunker or an airplane to go back to Tehran and, you know, take a few weeks off until the airstrikes are over. So I don't think that it's really intended to kill a bunch of Iranian people. It seems more like a political message, what we're headed for, that is reacting to the pressure to do something without starting a wider war. And then, of course, there's an option to not do anything and depart and pull our troops out of those places, so which I favor, because I think, as I hope we'll talk about, their presence is pointless. But, you know, you could combine those two things, too. You could say, look, we're going to do a big round of airstrikes on all these targets in Iraq and Syria to show people that they can't attack American troops. And then at the same time, we're going to take our people out of harm's way at these outposts in Syria and Iraq So they're not sitting there in range of all sorts of rockets, mortars, and missiles that not just Iran, but these different militias have and have been regularly targeting American troops with 150 attacks since the October 7th attack in Gaza and even regular attacks before that.
Mm-hmm. So what we hear many analysts essentially discussing is for the U.S. to have this challenge of basically finding a balance between what they see as deterrence and then escalation. And I think we've seen these many escalations in various different theaters since the beginning of this conflict, since October 7th in the Red Sea, in the northern border between Israel and Lebanon with Hezbollah, and also in Iraq with the militias. Do you think the other option, which is diplomacy, essentially the opposite of conflict, do you think those avenues have been tried and pursued by not just Israelis, but also the United States? Or has the U.S. put enough pressure on Israel to pursue diplomacy or diplomatic solutions to that conflict, the Israel-Hamas conflict, and also these other theaters in the broader region in the past few months?
No, I think a lot more could be done to stem escalation, including by pressing Israel for a ceasefire, as I think the United States is doing, at least on some level, with Bill Burns' trip to the region. But I certainly think we have not pursued that avenue as aggressively as we could. And of course, if you want to go back and look to the Trump administration, you know, when we pulled out of the Iran deal and slapped sanctions on Iran, and more generally kind of took up a position of something close to warfare with Iran, with the Soleimani strikes and the, you know, and then the tit for tat escalations with their groups they fund in Iraq and Syria, that was obviously sort of the polar opposite of a diplomatic approach. And we expected, at least most people expected, that the Biden administration would change things, and whether or not they re-entered the Iran deal would at least improve matters with Iran from a diplomatic perspective. And I think it's now fair to say they haven't done that. The kind of hawks in the Biden administration won out, and we've sort of continued the policies we had under Trump, only with less eagerness at the top of the administration for it to escalate. So, you know, in the Trump administration, you had as national security advisor John Bolton, someone who at one time who was an open advocate of bombing Iran. He wrote op-eds in the New York Times about it before becoming national security advisor. He said in his memoir that he thought that leaving troops, U.S. troops at the Al-Tanf base, which was linked to this, is geographically linked and logistically linked to this Tower 22 base on the other side of the Jordanian border, that leaving troops there was essentially something we were doing to mess with Iran in the sense of cutting off their ability to ship things across that area and to keep pressure on groups they were linked to. So, you know, this policy, which the Biden administration's these bases, which the Biden administration says are to fight ISIS, I think are really better thought of as an anti-Iranian thing. And, you know, we kept that policy. And we also seem to have kept the policy of blaming Iran for everything militias it might fund does. That, as I've complained for years, is sort of a straight line path to escalation with Iran. The Biden administration could have pursued a diplomatic path that might have yielded results, potentially even, you know, sort of breaking Iran's connection to some of these groups. I'm not sure how committed they are to funding all these different proxies. But beyond that, I mean, even if you get no diplomatic progress, there's another way to approach the region, which is just to say, you know, we're not going to be in charge of managing it. We're not going to be in charge of deterring actors on behalf of Israel, like Hezbollah, and we're going to communicate that to the Israelis. We're not going to be sticking bases in the Syrian desert in the name of fighting ISIS when everybody there other than us is also interested in going after ISIS, including the different militia groups that we're in a sort of state of war with now, including the Iranians. You know, we don't need to be in charge of this. And we hope that Israel makes progress with Hamas. And we hope that the Saudi-Iranian relationship doesn't get worse. But also, it doesn't really matter to us and our security. And we can just leave and let most of these things be someone else's problem.
Mm-hmm. And Ben, you mentioned Trump and how the policy hasn't really changed under this president, this administration, even though President Biden and some of his senior staff did criticize Trump's Middle East policies before they came into office, did promise reversing some of those, including returning to the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, and some other policies, even the Abraham Accords. But it seems like they have essentially either continued or championed those policies towards the Middle East. How different do you think this administration's Middle East policy looks, or it is a departure from the previous one, if any? And also, since we're in an election year, do you think if Joe Biden wins the election again and has a second term, that his second term would look any different than his first?
The Biden administration's Middle East policy is a continuation, in my view, of the Trump administration's Middle East policies. Now, whenever you talk about the Trump administration, I think you have to kind of separate out a couple of things. One is that the rhetoric, particularly from Trump, and the policy reality were not always connected. And secondly, the Trump administration, like all administrations, had a lot of divisions, but they were more profound in the Trump administration. I think the big difference between the Trump administration and the Biden administration, at least on paper, was their policy towards Israel and Palestine were much more adamantly pro-Israeli, or you could even say pro-Likud, and much more enthusiastic even about settlement building. Of course, the Trump administration moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, which is a big thing that Israel hawks wanted for years. More substantively, they didn't do anything that radical other than, support the Abraham Accords, which I don't know if anybody would call that radical, which was sort of a realization of an already existing detente or good relations between Israel and Gulf countries. And the Biden administration has embraced the Abraham Accords, going even further than the Trump administration ever did, and floating the idea that we would give security guarantees to Saudi Arabia to make them a U.S. ally, to make United States citizens and taxpayers responsible for defending Saudi Arabia, even in the event that they started a war. So that in a way is the difference, in that the Biden administration is even more hawkish than the Trump administration. But I think it's really sort of a continuation of the same thing. And likewise on Iran, as you said, the Biden administration's rhetoric going into office was more conciliatory. You know, it seemed like they were likely to go back into the JCPOA, the Iran deal. But in practice, they've kept all the same policies that Trump had. And as I already said, I think the Trump administration had not Trump himself, who pulled out of almost bombing campaign against Iran at the last second after the Iranian reprisal, which came after the Soleimani assassination. But, they had this policy where they stuck U.S. troops in Syria and Iraq, in Syria in particular, after the ISIS mission should have ended, when ISIS was on the ropes, and said, we're going to blame Iran for attacks on these guys. And the Biden administration has kept that posture and essentially has the same policy. So there's a kind of underappreciated, I think, reality of policy continuity in really bad ways, in my view.
And I want to ask you about the potential for another Trump administration, but let me first talk more about Iran. You mentioned the administration's general policy towards Iran and essentially the bigger group of Iranian allies, the state, non-state actors, the so-called axis of resistance. How do you assess the administration's approach towards Tehran, considering the nuclear negotiations and the current conflict? And do you think there could have been an alternative way that this administration could have done things, essentially, from the beginning to not be where they are vis-a-vis Iran and the broader axis of resistance today?
They could have gone back into the JCPOA. They could have relaxed sanctions against Iran. And they could have, and obviously the government and Iran changed and made things more difficult. But nonetheless, I think we could have done that. And having done that, we could have pursued a broader diplomatic agenda with them. And the Biden administration, for reasons that are somewhat mysterious to me, didn't do that and took a harder line. Maybe it has to do with their read of domestic politics. But to me, you know, you're going to get attacked by all the Iran hawks anyway. It's not clear to me that, you know, you really lose much by being actually more conciliatory and trying to limit conflict in the region as opposed to doing what they did. So, I just think that there's a lot of people in the United States government, even in the bureaucracy, like Central Command, who view themselves in a kind of long-running conflict with Iran and view it as their job to, contain and even confront Iran in various ways. You know, you always hear people talk about, well, we don't want Iran to have a Shia crescent where they can supply things to Lebanon and Syria. I've never understood the idea that this is our problem to solve, leaving aside the fact that I don't think we can really solve it with, you know, one base out on the edge of Syria or a couple bases in Syria. But it's a kind of underdeveloped confrontation policy, which is unattached, as far as I can tell, to any kind of larger theory about what we're up to. You know, like, are we there because we think Iran is going to become a regional hegemon that's going to kind of take over the region and in that event swallow up a lot of oil wealth and menace, you know, U.S. allies or the U.S. itself? If that's the argument, it's crazy. And because Iran just doesn't have the capability to really go beyond writing checks and sending things, you know, militarily, they're not about to take over a lot of territory. To the extent they've gained influence in Iraq, it's because we overthrew the government and helped them do that. So, I think there's a sort of understated anti-Iran policy that animates the Biden administration and a lot of people in Washington, D.C., but it's sort of hard to figure out what its larger strategic value is to me. So there's a long answer to your question.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this briefly, but how much of this do you think is domestic policy, both the administration's policy strategy vis-a-vis the October 7th attack in Israel, but also towards the broader region around the axis of resistance? How much of it is political theater inside the country or in Washington because this is election year, because of the pressure from the Republican side versus actual foreign policy and ground strategy?
Well, I think a lot of it is domestic politics. Certainly in an election year, it would be difficult to suffer, these three U.S. Army, I think they were combat engineers, these three guys being killed in Jordan and not respond with some kind of airstrike. That would open you up to a lot of attacks. More broadly, I think a lot of what the Biden administration is doing is connected to Israel and pleases, you know, a large, well, if not large, at least powerful domestic constituency in the United States, which is not just, you know, AIPAC or something like that. It's a lot of the right, you know, evangelists and so forth who are very pro-Israel. So some of it is domestic politics of pleasing those kind of constituencies. But, I think in a broader sense, it's more a conditioned kind of strategic habit of the people who are serving at the highest level of the Biden administration. Like, I'm not sure that their read on the domestic politics, that they don't have more room to change course, if that is their read, is correct. I just think that they have learned a kind of politics about what the United States should be doing in the Middle East, which says that we need to kind of maximize our control and confront Iran to that end without any attachment to a broader theory about what the United States needs from the region, which in truth really isn't much. You know, there's not a lot of global GDP there. You know, we could talk about the energy security or energy supply, but I don't think the United States having troops in the Middle East or getting into contretemps with Iran serves any kind of energy agenda. So I think there's just a triumph of bad ideas, which are socialized and in Washington, D.C., and that's the real culprit here.
Mm-hmm. And talking about the election, we know there's a possibility of Joe Biden actually not winning this election. Part of it might be related to his strategy in the region towards the conflict. At least it seems like he's going to lose a lot of Arab American, Muslim American votes, certainly Palestinian Americans. I don't know how vital that would be to his winning or losing the election, but let's assume if you think there's a chance for a Republican and potentially Donald Trump to return. How do you think a second Trump presidency is going to be different, his policy vis-a-vis the region? Do you think he'll bring more of the Rex Tillerson's and sort of push the his essentially ideas of pulling out of the region, reducing U.S. presence, or will we see more of the Mike Pompeo's and John Bolton's and doubling down on past policies towards the Middle East?
So there's a theory that the second Trump administration, if it comes, would be like the true Trump. And a lot of people who are even Trump supporters, you know, in Washington say stuff like this, that his initial mistake of hiring people like Tillerson and Mattis and H.R. McMaster and this more Washington establishment people will be corrected. And he'll get kind of true blue Trumpian people who are in aligned with his agenda of getting out of various things, including the Middle East. And I think that that's probably wrong. It's hard to say because I think things with Trump are very unpredictable. But what we do know about him is that his commitment to kind of policy detail as opposed to rhetoric is weak. He wanted to get U.S. troops out of Syria and essentially ordered that, but completely lost focus on it and left troops in Syria by the time, you know, when he left office. So, you know, I think a lot of things with Trump are like that, where there's a sort of, you know, a burst of desire for some kind of shift and then a lack of follow through. And I think that there's a good chance that he would, in fact, rely on more traditional Republican hawks because those kind of people, Tom Cotton, Lindsey Graham, you know, people who are ideologically aligned with them, because people like that have been loyal to him, have supported him. I think that goes a long way with him, and he might sacrifice whatever real disagreement he has as a result and put people like that back in office. And I think there's a good chance that if Trump were president, all the same things that are happening with U.S. troops now in Syria and the strike in Jordan occurred, that we would go to war with Iran. I think there's certainly a higher chance of that than if Biden were president. And I also think that if Trump were president, as much as the United States has hugged Israel and upset a lot of people by supporting the mass bombing of Gazans and killing so many people, that it would be substantially worse, that there would be absolutely no distance between the United States and Israel, and there would probably be enthusiasm for that kind of indiscriminate bombing. So, you know, things, I think it's important to remember, can always be worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, Ben, I want to thank you so much for joining the Iran podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be on, Nagar.
That was Benjamin Friedman, a policy director at Defense Priorities here in Washington. And thank you for listening to the Iran podcast. You can find us on all major podcast apps. So please subscribe and leave a review and rating for us. You can also follow us on Twitter, where we post new episodes. The account is @IranPodcast. I'm your host, Negar Mortazavi. And until next time, goodbye.